News Talk. AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew, along with Sam. Drew stepped off to get some coffee. You missed a very lively conversation about Cars 3.
I feel like I'm okay with that.
Well, you shouldn't be. It was a great conversation.
I feel like I'm all right with that.
We didn't want to. Do any spoilers for you, you know?
About a movie that I haven't...
It's a very progressive film.
No intention of seeing it.
It was very tastefully progressive.
Oh. That's good. That's actually a good way to frame it, as tastefully progressive. I'll give you that.
It was. It really was.
You're not selling me on this, folks.
I know.
You should see it.
It's no The Rock. It's no Con Air, mind
It's no
you.
Emma Watson film, okay,
it's true
people?
True story, yeah. It's no Finding Dory. Right, but it's, you know, it was good.
It was good. It was really good.
It was good. 651-989-5855 if you want to get in on this next conversation. Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien joins us to tell us how the jury got it all, wrong. I'm just kidding, Jeff. I'm not going to do that.
The Yanez trial wrapped up on Friday with not guilty verdict on all counts coming from the jury after, 4 days of deliberations. Apparently, the majority of the jury, 10 of the jurors, were in the not guilty camp from the get-go. It was two jurors that were sort of holding out that finally came around. Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, your initial thoughts on the verdict?
Well, you know, I was a bit surprised. I figured that they might convict him on one of the lesser charges. I wasn't surprised that he was acquitted on the manslaughter charge because there's such a high standard. The Supreme Court, in a case called Graham v. O'Connor, established a very rigorous four-part test to get to a determination that a law enforcement officer has used excessive force, be it deadly or not. So it's a high bar. It's not the same standard that you or I would be held to if we were facing a similar charge. Being given their background, given the circumstances of their job, they are given it's a higher standard. It's a reasonable officer in similar circumstances. So that I wasn't surprised about. You know, any time that someone loses their life in this way, it's a tragedy. My heart goes out to the family. And, you know, Officer Yanez, his life's forever changed. He lost his livelihood here. San Anthony Police Department announced right after the verdict was announced that he's not coming back. That's the right decision because, you know, he becomes a target in the community by being out there. So, you know, not just him,
but I think the entire police department in St. Anthony, I think, would find themselves at greater risk if he were still a member of that force.
Absolutely. But the thing for people to remember is this is one of three possible ways. You know, we talk about obtaining justice. There are three different methods here, three different areas here, and he just was acquitted in the criminal case in state court. As you guys mentioned in Sam's top five earlier, the Department of Justice is looking at pursuing charges. I think they're going to end up with the same issue that the jury faced in this decision, as again that very high bar that the law provides for law enforcement officers when it's dealing with excessive force. So I don't know that there's legs to a federal criminal case. But there is, I think that a civil suit against the city under, you know, Section 1983, a civil rights violation, is inevitable. And there's going to be some sort of financial settlement with the Castile family and the city of St. Anthony for what happened.
If people are going to be upset about anything, okay, and this is moving off of individuals coming to their own conclusions based off of the limited, based off of the evidence that they saw not being in court all the time. If people are going to be upset about anything, is there something that you can point to where you go, well, if you're going to be mad at the outcome of this, then this is a part of this trial that you should be specifically upset about? I mean, is it a matter of the tactic the prosecution used to try to get a conviction of the officer? Is there something you could point to that people would have a legitimate sort of gripe to complain about?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that the way our system is set up is it is set up primarily so that no innocent person is ever convicted of a crime they didn't commit. And our system would rather have, you know, one person not convicted that might be guilty. It'd rather have that than have nine people convicted that aren't. And that's the way our system works. That's why, I mean, you get a jury of your peers. They found jurors here that did not have any, that were as close as they could have to being unbiased about the case. You know, we've talked about a few weeks ago, but when they were going through the voir dire process and selecting this jury, both sides, prosecution and defense, go through that process of selecting the jurors that are going to be on there. We went through what evidence is going to be heard, whether the fact that he was a concealed carry permit holder, the fact that he was using marijuana at the time, all this evidence. That's why we have this process, and you don't always like the result, but I think the process was fair. I think the process was impartial. But like I said, this is one piece of it. You know, for Philando Castile's family, if you're wanting justice, unfortunately, in this case, given the standards, justice may come in the form of a financial settlement with the city versus having this individual, you know, be convicted and be jailed for what happened.
I've been saying throughout the trial, and I'm curious to get your feedback or your thoughts on it, that I felt like the prosecution was tasked with something that was nearly impossible, and that was proving to this jury beyond a reasonable doubt that there was no legitimate reason for Yanez to be in fear for his life. Because if the jury believes that there was a split second there where Yanez had legitimate reason to be afraid for his life, then I think it would be incredibly difficult to reach a guilty verdict, at least on the manslaughter charge. Do you agree with that assessment? Am I missing something there?
I do. And, you know, Drew, that's exactly the challenge here, is that the prosecution had to show some sort of willful intent or malicious intent. And that's going to be the same standard if there was a federal case as well. It goes beyond just, you know, mere negligence or, you know, if he had a belief, reasonably legitimate belief, that his life was in danger, then he was going to be acquitted, and that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing here that makes it complicated, anytime you have, you know, video footage released through the media, you have an individual tried in the court of public opinion before the actual criminal trial starts, no one's expectations are going to be satisfied.
Yeah, it's very easy for us to all sit back and watch the video footage and break it down frame by frame, look at the Diamond Reynolds footage, look at the dash cam footage and all that, and reach the conclusion that Yanez should not have discharged his weapon. It's really, really easy, but you need to put yourself in his shoes. You need to put yourself in that situation. And the bottom line is that we have, you know, under our current system, we have decided that if an officer of the law has legitimate reason to be afraid for their life, then they are tasked with defending themselves and defending the lives of the people around them. And right or not, that's what Yanez did that day. I'm of the opinion personally that I don't think Philando Castile should have died for what happened that day. I'm of the opinion that Yanez probably didn't clearly indicate the instructions for Castile to follow. And, you know, in a perfect world, that weapon would have never been discharged. But I can't sit here and say that if I were on that jury, I would have come to any sort of different conclusion based on the rules, based on the laws, and based on the charges that were being filed.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Drew. I think something went horribly wrong on the night of July 6, 2016 that wound up costing him, Philando Castile, his life. But I also agree with you that there was a process, evidence was heard. We only get snippets as we're reading stories in the media. We only get snippets of what's being argued in trial, what evidence is being introduced. The jury saw the whole picture. And I think that's the important thing here, is that there was a jury that looked at this. I was a little bit surprised that from the get-go there were 10 jurors that were in favor of acquittal. It was 10-2, you know, starting out with. So obviously that's indicative of the prosecution has a high, high burden in these cases, and a great majority of that jury from the outset of deliberation didn't believe that the prosecution met its burden.
If, as you know, as our legal expert, someone who's certainly studied the law a lot more than we have, granted, you're not a criminal lawyer, but you know you know a lot more about it than us. For those that are out there right now that are saying, you know, this is indicative of our justice system being broken, this is indicative of major problems with our criminal justice system. What would your response be to someone? Because I look at that and I look at what happened and I said, this is what should have happened, right? He went to trial. They came up with what they believed were appropriate charges. They presented their case to a jury and the jury reached their decision, and you have to kind of respect that decision. What could have been done differently to make people not, you know, a little more accepting of this outcome, or is there anything that could be done differently?
You know, Drew, I don't know that anything could be done. I think some people have different expectations, or maybe not reasonable expectations, of what the justice system is about. In this case, you know, it's not going to wind up with an individual being convicted, you know, and imprisoned for killing someone. Are there going to be consequences for, you know, whether or not, you know, the argument's going to, we can argue all day about whether or not Geronimo Yanez should have been a police officer. I mean, you look at some of the facts, I mean, you know, of this, of what we've seen, and it certainly seemed that something went wrong that night. And he's not going to be an officer anymore. The city is going to have financial consequences for that. And that's certainly going to affect going, this whole thing is going to affect going forward how that city deals with its law enforcement. You know, I think this is going to relate to training, to hiring, to a lot of different things. So there's far-reaching ramifications here outside of the, you know, obtaining a certain result that some folks wanted.
Yeah.
And that's just, I think that's the thing to remember. And, you know, there's no doubt that there are some, you know, some law enforcement officers out there that shouldn't be in law enforcement. There are a lot of great ones, too. And this is going to be this whole thing is going to be instructive for training and for hiring for years and decades to come.
Lawyer extraordinaire Jeffrey O'Brien, thanks, as always, for the time, sir. It was great talking to you this morning.
Thanks, guys.
You know, the part of this, and you made a comment a moment ago in terms of sort of satisfying people's minds and how people reacted to it. I was surprised that things didn't get much worse over the weekend. And I'm glad to see that things didn't get much worse over the weekend. And I think that is largely due to the fact that not only how difficult the situation was, how difficult the trial was and the circumstances, but I'd like to believe that deep down people understand that, you know, these were 12 individuals who were specifically chosen because they were the least likely to have already reached their own conclusion. And they were chosen split based off the prosecution and defense. And they all came to an agreement. And when it comes to the mind of this officer, and it didn't really dawn on me until we were talking with Jeff there a moment ago. But when it comes to the mind of this officer in that moment and the difficulty of proving the culpable, you know, negligence in this case, and whether or not he felt at risk, it didn't even need to be him legitimately feeling at risk. It was just a matter of, in that moment, for whatever reason, he felt like his life was at risk, which is why he discharged his weapon. And that in and of itself, wrong. I don't believe that Castile needed to die over the circumstances anyways, but the circumstances that brought that to bear, you know, when you try to argue that it was intentional in that regard, it really plays to how difficult it is, because in that moment, regardless of whether or not you like how he ended up feeling that way, he was able to prove that he did feel that way. Well, and when you watch the video, it sounds like it too.
At the very least, the prosecution wasn't able to prove that he did not have a legitimate reason to feel that
way.
And that's really the base. The burden was on the prosecution, as it always should be in a criminal case. The burden's on the prosecution to prove their case. And when you're dealing with a police officer and you're dealing with that situation, I don't know that any prosecution team could have ever really pulled that off. I think it was nearly an impossible task, which is why it's important to remember that consequences are being felt by this officer. Maybe not criminal in nature, but he's not walking away from this consequence free.
Right. 651-989-5855 will bring you more details on this coming up. And I disagree with one point on, I mean, I disagree, but lawyer Jeff O'Brien made a comment about, changing tactics and doing things moving forward. I don't believe you have to, and I'll explain why I don't think you have to, because I think this trial and this case kind of took care of that on its own. 651-989-5855. More coming up on Justice and Drew. Justice and Drew, along with Sam. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Now, I know it's a little late, but if you missed Movie Talk last week, be sure to download the podcast. You can listen to that via the iHeartRadio app. If you go to the Justice and Drew... I'm sorry, hold on, because you're laughing. If you go to the Justice and Drew channel on the iHeartRadio app, the Justice and Drew... Some people would even say the John Justice and Drew channel on the iHeartRadio app. You can download
J-O-H-N?
Fridays. J-O-N. It's J-O-N, not Jonathan. On the iHeartRadio app, which is free for your smartphone, you can listen to the very funny Sam hosting Movie Talk last week. You should go and check that out. And family members that were messaging me.
This is why you hate taking days off.
This is family members messaging me, telling me how you did. Actually, the text was, did you listen to Movie Talk? It was really funny.
I did.
It was. Yeah. I did. You know I did because I was messaging you. Because I was commenting on it while listening along. I thought it was very funny as well. If you want to hear how funny it was.
I am slowly starting my takeover.
You can listen to that, Mealy.
Yeah, listen to the start of my takeover.
It's amazing that things actually moved forward while you were recovering.
It's amazing how funny everything was.
Your poor little wisdom teeth got taken. You know, Sam broke like eight collarbones and took less time off than
I would have rather dealt with that. I would break them, break me.
Come break me. John.
That pain, the pain that I had on that Wednesday night was I'm not kidding you. I've never experienced that level of pain before. I almost blacked out.
That just speaks to your
it speaks to how bad it hurts.
You cannot equate a collarbone that's shattered in two spots, completely displaced with your tooth problems.
I am still
experiencing the effects of that.
So am I. I'm still experiencing that today with my teeth.
It was like 5 days ago.
Broken showmates, I swear. I'm like the only one here that's complete and whole.
At the end of the day, my open heart surgeries will trump right until Zerwas walks in. So I know I can always default to that. Hey, real quick on the Yanez trial, our lawyer Jeff O'Brien made a comment about what does law enforcement do moving forward when it comes to situations like this. Look, my humble opinion, they don't do anything. You don't do anything. Sometimes, and I'm not trying to be insensitive. This was a horrible, tragic incident. And I actually thought the mom, Castile's mom, made it. The first half of her statement was very good. Mm-hmm. The first half of her statement was, look, ultimately, he is going to be judged. Right. I'm a believer in that, and I agree. Ultimately, Yanez is going to face judgment in one way, shape, or form. The adding of the, and I hope he dies tonight, was ridiculous. But to my point, bad stuff happens. And sometimes horrible circumstances lead to horrible instances and bad things happen. They don't happen often, thankfully. And in terms of training law enforcement to do things differently, no. Law enforcement is trained appropriately, but it doesn't mean that everything is going to go down perfectly every single time. And the fact that this trial happened, the fact that it went to court, that a jury made a decision, and all the eyes that needed to be watching it, that's enough training in my mind that gives an officer pause if they ever get into any sort of similar circumstance. This will be in the back of their mind. So I don't think there is any further training. You have to, I don't mean chalk it up to bad things happen, but sometimes bad things happen.
It's true. And I agree. I'm willing to give, you know, Castile's mother made some statements after the verdict. And she said some things that I think, you know, if she were less dealing with very raw and very traumatic emotions, she probably wouldn't have said. And I'm willing to give her a pass on that.
Sure.
You know, I'm
everybody was, it seemed like.
Yeah, exactly. We've got a couple of people who want to comment on this. Sarah in St. Paul. Good morning, Sarah.
Yeah, good morning. you are sounding very foolish right now. Bad things happen and no change in training needs to happen. I completely disagree. I think that the best legacy that we can, and what we owe Mr. Castile and Mr. Yanez for that matter, is to change things so that this never happens again.
How do you do that?
And in a city where, depending on what you read, 7 to 9% of the citizens are African American, for, depending on what you read, 41 to 52% of the stops and the arrests to be of those African Americans, something's wrong.
Are you, Sarah, have you looked at all the demographics when it comes to the individuals?
I've read the Star Tribune. I've read everything that I can read to get a feel for what the facts are. And to me, just a regular person living in St. Paul, Minnesota, horrified by this, it seems that something's wrong. And we owe it to that dead man and his family to do what we can to be sure that this doesn't happen anymore.
We weren't involved. We don't know. We weren't involved. We don't know anything. But let me go.
Here's what I know. There's a gross misalignment in the citizenry and in the way the police officers stop people. And these are traffic stops. This isn't for criminal behavior. This is for a bad car or suspicious driving or something. And my thought is, are police officers quotas? Are they supposed to pull over a certain number of people a day? Are they supposed to be, charging $1,000 in fines every day? And if that's the case, that would explain some of this apparently irrational behavior. And we can, change their training to say, look, if you do
don't pull people over.
Okay.
Don't pull people over.
For you to say that nothing needs change, it makes you sound beyond insensitive. It makes you sound foolish.
Hold on a second, Sarah. You made a comment at the beginning. We need training so that this never, ever happens. What training do you think is going to happen that is going to take place that is going to cause that outcome?
Just what I said. Please be aware, and maybe we need to track this and flag people. If more than 40% of your stops are of African Americans and only 7% of our citizenry are African American, maybe you need to take a look at what's causing you to pull people over. That's wrong. It's out of balance.
You're never going to get what you want. You're never going to be able to put training in place to stop this from happening 100%.
We can try.
It's always try, isn't it? It's always we can try.
There's no change needed.
No, what you're talking about is profiling. What you're talking about is law enforcement picking and choosing, doing exactly what you don't want them to do. What you are talking about is telling law enforcement to pick and choose who they pull over based off of certain criteria, including somebody's skin color.
I'm not talking about profiling. I'm talking about math.
You can't get to the math without profiling, Sarah.
And tracking and reality and awareness. That's what I'm talking about. And I just think that for you to say no change need happen and that these things happen, no, these things don't happen. For somebody to die with 10 seconds warning for a traffic stop, no, you don't get to say, well, bad things happen. We don't get to
this
say
was a
that.
Bad thing that happened, and it doesn't happen very often.
No, what we get to say as a society, as members of this society in Minnesota, what we get to say is something has to change. And we are going to stand up and be sure that it does.
Well, I just would say this. If things are going to change, let's have them change based on data, based on information, not based on feelings, not based on sensitivity. If you look at those numbers, there's a lot more behind those numbers than just those numbers on the surface, the percentage of population versus the percentage of people that are pulled over. You need to dig into that data. You need to dig into those numbers, find out how many of those pullovers were illegitimate or unwarranted, and then work it off of that.
The changes she wants are not going to get the results that she desires. That's just, it's going to make matters worse.
Let's go to Will calling from Chanhassen. Go ahead, Will.
Oh, good Lord. Look, ultimately what she's complaining about is the same thing as the chicken and egg problem, okay? Is the number of stops due to the number of crimes, or are the number of crimes that are being convicted as a result of the number of stops?
Mm-hmm.
That's basically the argument here. And those who complain about racial profiling being the cause of the stops are assuming that it's the second rather than the first. I would contend that it's the first, that the number of crimes that are convicted are proportioned to the number of crimes that are actually occurring. And if we want this to stop, the first thing that the community that feels put upon needs to do is to watch that video by Chris Rock and actually take it to heart, where he says, don't be an idiot. If you're getting pulled over, you don't smart talk or bad mouth or you do anything to the cop. You put your hands where they can see them,
yeah.
And you don't do something stupid.
That's
the solution to not getting shot.
That's what I do every time I'm pulled over, and I'm not going to say it's a solution, but every time I get pulled over, that's what I do. 10-2.
But here's the problem, though.
I've been pulled over plenty of times. And, dude, if you saw me, you would think I just got out of a motorcycle gang, okay? I got a beard that would rival anything on Duck Dynasty, and my head shaved like a baby's butt, all right? Some guy pulls me over, he automatically thinks I'm in trouble. I'm a licensed attorney. Okay, there is no way in the world I am going to say anything to a cop other than yes, sir, no, sir. And if you arrest me without cause, thank you, sir. You just gave me a civil rights lawsuit, and I will see you in court. And that's the attitude that every citizen should take.
The problem is, it appears from what we've seen that Philando Castile may have been trying to follow the officer's instructions. And the whole sticking point in the case was based around, were the officer's instructions clear? And were they proper? I have legitimate concerns and questions. Clearly what happened didn't warrant the threshold of meeting criminal charges, at least not as the prosecution laid them out and as the jury decided, but we still walk away with those questions.
651-989-5855. We'll get right back to all of your phone calls. Don't go anywhere. Coming up on Justice and Drew. Twin Cities News Talk, Justice and Drew, along with Sam out of the Star Tribune. The verdict could be seen as reassuring for police in the Yanez trial, but several former officers said they believe the trial could instead have a chilling effect from whether they police cooperate when they become the target of an investigation to how they deal with the public, saying the case further complicates policing in many different ways. And a comment I made earlier, and I stick by it, and that is, moving forward, what do? I don't think you do anything. I think that we've been making strides. We've been making efforts to improve relations between law enforcement and the communities. And sometimes it's tough to hear, but sometimes bad things happen. And this was an incredibly unfortunate circumstance. I agree with Drew that Castile should not have lost his life, but I also was not in the courtroom to review all of the evidence, and it's a very difficult thing to prove the actual intent of that officer. I respect the system, and moving forward, I don't think you need to have further training of officers, that this trial in and of itself was enough to warrant that.
I don't know if we need further training of officers or not. I'm not an expert in that arena, but I don't know that we want to make that decision based upon this particular instance. You know, you don't want to make big decisions like that under the guise of, well, we got to do something. We got to do something to make sure, because that's how some of our worst policies and our worst decisions get made as a society, is that just desire to, well, we got to do something. A bad thing happened, and we want to make sure this bad thing never happens again, so we have to make massive changes. And the bad things kind of keep happening because we're human beings, and human beings make mistakes, and you suffer the consequences of those mistakes. And Officer Yanez is suffering those consequences.
Yeah.
Those consequences may not be criminal in nature, and I don't know that they should be, but there are consequences. Let's go to Rick in Mankato. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi.
Good morning, Rick. What's your comments on this?
Well, the comment I wanted to make is that I agree with you guys on most every point you make, but the thing that saddens me and the thing that bothers me, first of all, the guy died. Second of all, this guy pulled the trigger 7 times, as I understand it. Now, I could understand 1, 2, or 3, but 7? That's the fact of this case that bothers me the most.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you.
I do disagree. Whether it's one shot or two shots that kill him, or 7, you know, the trigger was pulled. And to me, it doesn't, with all of the other evidence that we didn't see, just based off of what I saw, if you're getting into the mindset of this officer and his life being threatened, whether it was two or seven, you know, the trigger was pulled.
Seven to me indicates a state of panic. And I think our officers need to do everything they can not to find themselves in that state. You know, your job when you're, you know, when that decision gets made that you need to discharge your weapon, it's with the intent of, you know, ending the situation. I don't know that seven times warrants that.
No, I don't know, because I wasn't him. I wasn't in his mind, and I wasn't in the courtroom.
I don't either. Dave, good morning. Dave?
Yes.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, well, you guys are doing a great job. There's a lot of good points that are being brought up. One of the issues, or a couple of the issues, is that as a retired officer, I've been there, I've done that, I've been in the shooting, I've been in the near shootings, I've also been or am an expert witness testimony for law enforcement and stuff, is that there's a case out there called Graham versus Connor, which everybody, you know, really would be well to take a look at this and to understand just how this evolved and just how this takes place with the law. If you don't like it, you've got to take a look at this. The Supreme Court did a tremendous job of holding officers accountable. But one of the, you just had a caller by the name of Sarah that called, mm-hmm. very emotional about this thing. One of the issues that the Supreme Court clearly talked about was the emotion of this whole thing. And the problem, the question becomes now for us as law enforcement and all of the people that I've worked for and trained are willing to listen is, if you want change, then what is that change going to be?
Right.
It can't be based on emotion. It can't be based on, I think, and I think one of you just made a good point to that, is what do you then want to do? What is it going to look like, and how are you going to accomplish that? And I started in the late 70s and retired about 10 years ago. The training that I've had over the years and as a trainer now has evolved tremendously. We are light years ahead of where we used to be. And we can always address issues with training. The issues we face are training. The problem becomes is that time and money and resources and all those kind of things, and that's not an excuse, but we have exceptional law enforcement officers on the job doing tremendous work.
Yep.
And this is a subject that isn't going to be solved by a comment. It's a very deep conversation with a lot of things that need to be explored. But we have to get past, and I understand the emotion, we have to get past the emotion to then legitimately look at the issues. And if there are issues to be solved, then we need to solve those issues. But they have to be expressed and talked about with solutions, not just emotion.
And Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's fair to say that police departments all around the country are going to look at this situation, are going to look at what happened, are going to look at the video from this incident, are going to look at the trial, how it all played out, and the outcomes, and they're going to incorporate lessons from this in future training.
Absolutely. So, you will have, this will be brought up in training venues, it will be played for in-service programs. This isn't, for the lack of better terms, is not going to die. This is going to continue. We will use this. We will talk about it.
Well, and I think
tell you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, Dave, and to my point prior to Sarah's phone call, in that sort of not trying to be insensitive, we don't need to do anything. The larger point was exactly what we're talking about. There are already mechanisms in place. Law enforcement entities across the country are already looking at this and taking it a step further. Not just in the upper echelons of law enforcement will this be looked at and then talked about to the officers, but I think in the officers' minds themselves, who simply followed this, I would imagine that if you followed this case and paid attention, that if you come into a similar circumstance, even without talking to a superior, this instance is going to come into your mind and you're going to make your judgment calls based off of what you learned in the case without even having to put any other mechanisms in place.
Absolutely. I can tell you from training officers, we train probably 500 to 600 to 700 officers a year in various disciplines. This has already been talked about. Officers are talking about this amongst themselves in training venues and open conversation, and this has already had an effect on officers.
Right, and that's I want to reiterate that to Sarah's point earlier. You know, something needs to change, and we need to do something. Well, things are going to change and things are going to happen. And lessons from this incident are going to be incorporated in every officer's training in almost every department across the country going forward.
Right. Well, and I think I'll hold off on her motivation there. But I think a lot of it comes from a desire of still wanting some type of justice for those that were upset at the outcome, and that justice they want serving in the form of new legislation or a change in rules that somehow would keep this from happening.
We have a show on evenings here in Twin Cities News Talk, Closing Argument with Walter Hudson. It's on 9 to 11 Monday through Friday, and on Friday night, and if we have time, I don't know that we will. If we have time, we'll play some of the audio. But on Friday night, one of the jurors called in.
Yeah.
If you want some really interesting insight as to, you know, what the jury pool was thinking, what led to this verdict, this not guilty verdicts, I highly recommend go grab the podcast of Friday night's Closing Argument with Walter Hudson. And again, we're going to take a couple more calls and then we'll try to play some of the audio. Henry Rosemount, real quick, go ahead.
Hello, Henry.
Hello.
Hey.
Good morning. What are your thoughts on this?
I just want to weigh in really quick. I've got a short comment. In the conceal and carry issue, I'm a permit holder for over 10 years here in Minnesota and consider myself to be a weapons expert. I've 16 years in the military, combat veteran from Vietnam. But anyway, I'm an old guy. But I know some law enforcement officers both in Minneapolis and here in Rosemont, and there is no criteria has been or standardized as far as what do both the person that's in, you know, interacting with a police officer in a traffic stop or, you know, for whatever reason you're going to interact with the officer. There's nothing in black and white for me, and there's also nothing in black and white for him or her in a situation where you have a permit holder that's armed. It's, you know, in the vehicle.
And there probably shouldn't be. I mean, I think, you know, officer discretion, allowing officers to take circumstances into account and use their discretion from one circumstance to another is very important.
Let's talk to Mark in Minneapolis. Good morning, Mark. Welcome to Twin Cities News Talk. What are your thoughts on this?
Thanks for taking my call again. Well, first off, here, I want to blow Sarah's deal about racial profiling out of the water. I have a very good friend who's a police officer in North Minneapolis, and the majority of the people that live in North Minneapolis are African American. That's his office. That's where he works. I just talked to him, and last Friday he did 5 tickets for speeding in North Minneapolis. They all happened to have been to African American people. And I'm sorry, that's just the way that the graphics are. The situation also of as far as 7 rounds going out, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the teaching now is because of all of the body armor and stuff that you can readily buy, that the 2 or 3 shots don't work anymore. It's called a mag dump. And you know what? The emotion has to go to the police officer on this. From a guy that's had weapons pointed at him and also that has been shot, man, I'll tell you what, when that weapon gets pointed at you, there's a fight or flight thing that goes through you right off the bat, and sometimes the training just goes right out the window. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in.
So on Walter Hudson's show, he actually had a juror that called in to give their thoughts and comments on what they experienced.
We don't have time to play the whole call. We'll share some of the audio with you. Also, again, encourage you to go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and download the Friday night podcast from Closing Argument.
Let's go to our mystery caller, juror in the Geronimo Yanez case. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thanks.
So what's your side of the story?
Oh, I just, you know, I've got an old AM radio in my basement and turn it on when I'm down there painting. I happen to hear your station. Haven't been watching the news at all this week, and especially not tonight. But, you know, I heard you say Dennis's name and something that he had said, you know, in a report afterwards. And I just, you know, I just wanted to say that Dennis is the neatest guy. Everybody in there, all 12 of us were. Even if we disagreed, we respected each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could argue, and then at lunch or a break, we were just talking about whatever. And it's been just a, you know, as painful as it was, it's been a interesting study in, you know, human nature and, you know, interpersonal relationships for me, but also I just want people to know it's just so difficult when they brought us in the courtroom and read the verdict. We all went back and they put us back in our little room, and they always locked the door, so you know, it's pretty lonely. But we all sat there because there was a good portion of the courtroom that kind of screamed out, you know, some obscenities, and kind of were asked to leave. And we all sat there in complete silence for 3 minutes until one of the older guys that you know, kind of lightened things up with his stories during break, said, "I wish they knew how hard it was."
Sure.
For us as well. And so,
right.
You know, it was just so gut-wrenching. And
right.
I just hope everybody knows that it's not, you know, we came to where we came based on the law.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all, you know, most of us were crying in there, but, you know, we were all, you know, feeling so torn, you know, there was no good outcome that could come out of
right.
it.
So right.
From day one, it was just kind of like, we're going to do our best. And, you know, we did. And so I feel like if I ever saw any of those people again, I would, you know, give them a hug. It's the kind of relationship I think that.
You're talking about your fellow jurors.
Fellow jurors, yeah. Just, you know, 11 people that I might never have met, but just a good cross of society. You know, we had people that were nurses and more business professionals and students, and you know, and everybody had different experiences, and we all listened to each other's stories, and you know, we all just kind of became a pretty tight knit group. And you know, it was unfortunate at the end we had to leave under, you know, escort or whatever, but
right.
We all kind of split. But, you know, I did get a few numbers, and I plan on, you know, having a couple of friendships out of this. And you know, it's just something I'll never forget. And I just thought, you know, the moment when we went to the jury room after the verdict was read was just something I just think people should know. It was just, you know, terrible for us, too. I mean, not that we didn't feel good about the verdict we came to. That was the best we could do, but
yeah, I think you want to listen to the whole thing. We don't have time to play the whole call. It's about 8 minutes long, and it's on the Twin Cities News Talk Closing Argument podcast page from Friday night. It's called Yanez Juror Calls In. I think the big takeaway from that is, based on the law and based on what they were tasked with trying to prove as a prosecution, as much as I believe that mistakes were made and that Falando Castile did not deserve to die in that situation, I don't know that anybody could have reached a guilty verdict based on the law as it stands now.
On tomorrow's show, Sam's Top 5 you do not want to miss at 6:20. Plus, the Star Tribune, what did not happen in Minnesota was an actual tribute to Dayton. We'll give you details on this ridiculousness. Do you hear me? I don't want nobody to give me nothing.